listening to Leadership Conversations. And today I'm really looking forward to talking with Jackie Edge, a HR recruitment consultant from Envisage HR Solutions here in Geelong. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, Marie. How are you?
Really good. Yes. Great to be here with you
today. Oh, thank you for inviting me.
And looking forward to this conversation very much. We've had Indeed. So many already, and this is formalising it all. I met Jackie at a networking event back in December here in Geelong, and it's when I meet someone like Jackie that I realise why I'm committed to face-to-face networking, because we really resonated well together, didn't we, Jackie? We could have talked all night.
I know, we certainly did. But networking events are so important to me as well, finding like-minded people and having the opportunity to connect.
Yes, yes. And I've become aware over the years that the most important thing about networking is the part that most people don't do, and that is the follow-up. And so when I followed up with you on a Zoom call some weeks ago and we began sharing ideas again, I just knew that I had to have you on one of my leadership conversations. And the idea of leadership meets recruitment and how to get the right person for the right job really seemed like something where we had real connections and flow between the two of us. So here we are.
Absolutely, here we are. And nurturing team cultures and guiding team cultures is really paramount to customer experience, stakeholder experiences in all businesses. And that's what fuels my passion of finding the right people that can not only do the job that you need them to do, but they can add value to your organisation. They're a great cultural fit, but they enhance your culture and add value to your business. So
that passion you talk about that really I picked up on in the conversations that we had, both when we were networking and on Zoom since then. But Jackie, I think it was when we began to talk about the frustrations that leaders have around managing low performing employees that we began to really spark off one another, because this is a big part of my work, helping leaders enhance the performance of their employees. And what's most challenging for them are employees who are not performing at the expected level. And while leaders are often very critical of those employees, they feel they're lazy, they're disengaged, they have poor work ethics, they're disorganised. At least that's what they say to me when I talk to them. As I begin to ask them questions and try and understand it further, it becomes very obvious to me that the employee is a bad fit for the position. Often they're a bad cultural fit for the organisation even. And they probably should never have been hired in the first place. They possibly performed well in the interview, but neither had the experience nor the skills, especially the soft skills, to perform in that role. And very often the leaders will then, after we've gone through that sort of reflective process with them, they'll acknowledge that they had some doubts about the person, but they seem minor compared to the strengths that the person appeared to have. In other words, they perform well in the interview. Or they tell me that they needed someone desperately to fill a role and that person was the best of those they interviewed. And I suspect, Jackie, that's where you often get engaged. After that failure of one bad appointment or an appointment or a hiring decision that didn't work out well and they realise they need some specialist assistance. Would that be right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's often where we meet our new clients is, you know, they've been running their businesses really well for maybe 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, but they experience a little bit of growth and then all of a sudden the business and the complexity of the employee relationships and the administration behind that just becomes a little bit unwieldy. And once something doesn't go quite right, they realize, oh, how do I get out of this? To keeping my culture intact, keeping my customer base intact, and understanding the legalities of that. Yeah, so that's absolutely when we get involved.
And as you describe it there, it's very much what I see happening. They have so much on their plate. They're doing so many things. This is such an important role. They're people. And just having the right people is absolutely crucial to the success of their organisation.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say that, you know, from the outset, everyone wants it to work. So the individual going for the job, you know, they're there because they want the job. Hopefully for more than just that they want a job. And the hiring person, they want someone to do the job. So, yeah, technical skills, you know, it's good to kind of ascertain that. But you touched on before those soft skills and assessing the cultural fit. It's really important. The cultural fit is about, you know, the customer experience, the end result. The right fit is about, you know, staff retention and getting really high team performances, high morale, high behaviour, high trust, and high speed and decision making. So understanding that cultural fit's really imperative. But there's just something else. Sorry, as you were talking, I was just thinking that often what happens is, you know, like I said, people begin the relationship with all good intentions, but this can deteriorate quickly. And in those instances, yeah, there might not be a great cultural fit, but there are other things that happen. And these other things are often around expectations. So the expectation of the role and that integration of the new employee can sometimes be overlooked. And some people are thrown into the deep end and swim, and, you know, they enjoy that and they're fine and weaving. But other people need that onboarding process to support them, really. And that onboarding process is really important for cultural integration and understanding those expectations more broadly.
It's not life or our professional life. To be able to see it real clearly, often it's someone from the outside looking in and with another set of skills that can see what's happening there. So I'd imagine a recruitment specialist can more easily pick up a lot of things that the actual leader can't pick up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that to get that cultural fit is really around understanding value alignment. And that value alignment is a nexus between the candidate and the organisations, the culture, the environment, and the opportunities.
And it'd also be around their brand too, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what they, how that person fits with the brand. And I think that's
absolutely.
Often, I even pick that up when I'm talking to leaders. I think, how on earth did you appoint this person? Because they're not even on brand with you. They've got a whole different reason for being there to what you believe your company's about.
Yeah, that's right. And that comes down to authenticity. You want your brand to be authentic, and you want everyone who talks to your brand to represent that effectively.
Can I come back to those soft skills, Jackie? Because this is where all my work actually revolves around.
Yeah.
Soft skills. In most of the cases with whom I'm involved, it's not an employee's technical skills that see them becoming a problem. It's often they're very good technically. And that's usually the reason that they were appointed in the first place. But it's their interpersonal skills which we are calling soft skills, or what are also called their human skills, that cause the problem. And they are unable to get on with others in the team, for example. They may be abrupt or conflictual. They are easily stressed, they're disorganized, and they can't meet deadlines, or they may have unrealistic expectations of everyone else. And in spite of their excellent technical skills, these employees become the bane of their leader's life, you know. And I was reading just in the last week, actually, that some research in 2019 by Deakin Co. and Deloitte Access Economics found that by 2030, two-thirds of jobs in Australia will be soft skill intensive.
Yes.
So two-thirds of jobs will be soft skills intensive in 10 years' time.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, I know leaders find it very difficult to interview for those skills. You know, how they're intangible. And how do you pick up the people that got those skills and those that haven't got them? How does a recruitment specialist do that?
Yeah, well, there's a process to it. And that process, it's a proven process that we've developed over time. And it starts very early on in the engagement. So when somebody applies for the position, I'm looking for various touch points throughout the process. So I'm looking for, you know, perhaps an inquiry before they submit their resume. Then I'll definitely have a look at the resume. And then I'm looking for a follow-up afterwards from them. So this is just demonstrating all that proactive behaviour. It's demonstrating their written communication skills via emails, a telephone call. They're demonstrating their verbal communication skills, their level of professionalism throughout their life, how they answer the call, what voice message do they leave. This minutia is what I'm looking for.
And you're also picking up their attention to detail, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Just the very way they answer the phone or send an email or...
Their passion and their hunger. I want to know that they've researched the organisation I'm representing, and what effort, what investment of time have they put into this process? Because to me, I will equally, you know, in most instances, I will put in an equal amount of time to what they've given to make sure that they're appropriately considered. So during that process, we have and then there's a series of interviews. I'm looking for, I mentioned before, a value alignment. I'm looking for their attitude, because what we're talking about is, yeah, we assess the technical skills, but I tell you what, you can go and get a diploma for technical skills or get some experience, but it's those soft skills. You can coach, but you can't coach and you can't teach attitude. So I'm looking for keywords. I'm looking for their interests within and outside of work. I'm looking for their passion for the industry or their passion for the company or the passion for the role itself. I'm looking for something. What's their motivation for getting this job? And then the other thing you just asked about, how we kind of, you know, get a better grasp of their soft skills. Well, probably 10, 15 years ago, we'd, you know, the interview questions would be fairly transactional. The interviewer, the recruitment specialist would say, what are your communication skills like? And the candidate would say, they're great. The recruitment person would put a tick next to that box. But, you know, that's clearly not very effective because everybody thinks they've got great communication skills. So now what we're doing is we've really shifted those questions around. And I'm not sure whether you've heard, Marie, of a concept called behavioural questions.
Yes.
Behavioural interviewing.
Yes.
Yeah. So behavioural interviewing is based on the concept that the best predictor of future performance is past behaviour. And the more recent that behaviour, the more likely it is that that person will behave in a similar manner in the future.
Yes.
Yeah. So a traditional interview question, how do you deal with a conflict situation at work? That's a traditional interview question.
Yes.
Whereas a behavioural interview question might be something like, we've all had to deal with conflict at work from time to time. Can you tell me about the most recent conflict situation you've had to resolve at work? Who was involved? What did you do and how was it resolved?
Yes.
So I'm looking for a real-time example of how this person perceives a problem, how they are problem-solving it, what action they took, and I'm looking for the result that they achieved.
Yes.
Because really, as a hirer, I want to know what you've done and whether you can do that for me or my client.
Yeah. But as well as them giving the answer there, you're also picking up their communication skills.
Yeah.
You're also picking up their ability to problem solve, which is a crucial for me, it's a crucial leadership skill, or not just a leadership skill today, when everything is up in the air, for someone to be able to critically reflect, to problem solve. You're picking up those other things in a question like that too, aren't you?
Absolutely. And then also what I'm looking for is a structured response. So I'm looking for someone to be able to say the situation, I'm looking for the opportunity, I'm looking for the action, and I'm looking for the result. So this tells me that this person's prepared for the interview. They just haven't swanned out, you know, and put a bit of lippy on, that they've actually sat down and thought about what they can offer. But I just on interpersonal skills, I've got a great example here of a behavioural question for interpersonal skills.
Yes.
So if you wanted to use this to ask candidates, this is a great question. Thinking back to the first few days of your last position, how did you go about establishing relationships with your new colleagues? How did they respond to your way of handling this task?
That's
so all of a sudden, you start to get a feel for how they build relationships, how they communicate, and the deep thinking that goes behind the actions.
And I find both with leaders and employees in the organisation, that when they come into a new job, they often feel they've got to prove that they're good, they can do it, they can do this work. And they focus on that, not on the relationship stuff. So they'll go and they immediately get people offside right from the start. They're revealing that their soft skills aren't very good, but in fact they might be good, but they haven't realized that how important they are to the job. They're more trying to prove that I'm technically competent to do this job. So I'd imagine when you ask a question like that in the interview and get them thinking right at the start about how important the forming of relationships is, that might also make them think, you know, why did she ask me that? That's interesting that she asked me that. And maybe I need to give a bit of thought to that if I get this job.
Interview isn't the end of the process. It's really midway. That probation period also represents their onboarding experience, how they start to integrate into the company. One thing we do is do follow-up calls throughout that probation period. Now, I'll just quickly say that some people have, in the past, it's been a 2 or 3 month probation period. I encourage all of your listeners to really extend that out to 6 months. It really protects the business and it provides that window of opportunity to manage behaviour and performance much more easily.
And to help the person accommodate to the job. It's sort of your onboarding process, isn't it? That you can actually, like, they they mightn't be performing well, but that might not be because they, for an ulterior motive, it might be that they're just nervous or anxious or not sure of themselves, and therefore it can be, they can be helped to learn that. There can be some to and fro feedback.
Absolutely, and we can nip that in the bud early. Now, I just want to tell you about a conversation that I had this morning that is really relevant to what we're talking about here. I placed an IT project manager in a position within a startup. The startup's been operating for a number of years, maybe 5-7 years. The person that I placed was incredibly experienced. He has not only honed his IT skills, his project management skills, but also his leadership skills. From the outset, he demonstrated his communication and written skills throughout the application process. So by the time I met him, I felt like I already knew him. He really stood out at so many levels. And when I introduced him to my client, he was an obvious choice. So, you know, this is his probation period right now. So, you know, 6 weeks in or so, I've given him a call just to touch base and see how things are going. And I was shocked at what the conversation, you know, resulted in. I'm just reading a couple of my notes here. I don't see why I should work here. This culture is the worst in my life. The team has never had any leadership. You can see that this really highly experienced, hugely highly performing fellow is in an organisation now.
Yes.
And it ticks all his boxes from a professional perspective.
Yes.
From a cultural alignment with the owner, yes, and the managing director, yes.
Yes.
But what is happening here is he has a peer that is working at the same grade as him,
yes,
and
yes,
his peer is 100% threatened by his position and yes, his entering into the organization. And what this person is doing is controlling information, is undermining his ability to lead his team.
Yes.
Playing emotional games.
Yes.
You know, and compromising his ability to make decisions and actually get things done. One example he said was a task that should take 10 minutes is taking a day. So the fellow that I placed there, I think that he's one of a few great, great staff that are in there, and he's passionate to stick it out and to see, yes, that change and to transform,
yes,
that team.
Yes.
But as a HR professional, well, we've got a bad hire in there.
Yes.
And that person is embedded in the organisation.
Yes.
And that person controls a lot of information. And I suppose, you know, this is a great example of the experience of a newcomer coming into an organisation,
yes,
and saying, how do I handle this?
Yes.
But also, yes, as, you know, when you're looking at your organisations and you're planning your human resources, because that's what,
yes,
they are,
yes,
you look at where information sits and control and influence and succession planning, so that, yes, you don't have those bubbles of information, and, you know, you're creating a culture where people can come and their strengths can be realised,
yes,
and that they can contribute.
Yes.
And that onboarding process at the get-go and the selection process is paramount for that.
Yes. And look, all organisations want talented people. They
indeed
go after the talented people. But if they put them in, bring them into the organisation, mm, and put them into a toxic culture, and it might only be, as I gather in this case, one small area. There might be lots of other places in the organisation that are functioning, you know, where the culture is good. But you've got something here where they're threatened by this other person. This is not this is not a recruitment issue as such. This is where managers and leaders hesitate to deal with that toxic person. They fail to have those constructive conversations. They keep on putting it off. They don't have the skills themselves to have those critical conversations. Eventually, in the end, what usually happens in an organisation like you're talking to about, that talented person will leave and they'll be left with the other one.
That's what happens.
That they actually want in their organisation will leave because they're not prepared to deal with the one that's causing the problem.
And Marie, I've got another great example for you of a client who's a builder. And what got the owner thinking was that their staff turnover. And he looked at, you know, the last 12 months and went, hang on a minute, we've had 8 staff leave. What's going on?
Yes.
And he'd appointed someone 2 years ago in a position of influence, but didn't want to have those early conversations that gut feeling right at the beginning and through that probation period, those you know, challenging conversations, but they can be positive as well.
Oh, yes.
He didn't do that. And so the effect 2 years down the track is that you've got low morale. You know, you've got corridor conversations where people are, you know, there's this gossip going on.
Yes.
It undermines all that hard work that you put as a business owner into developing that culture.
Yes. And I always talk about dealing with something when it's an observation before it becomes a problem.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's the easiest way to make sure that things are going to be culturally right in the organisation if there's someone that's sort of slipping out of line, but also to have good working relationships with everybody.
Indeed. And I think that what you're talking about is fostering a culture of transparency and trust.
Yes.
But what I as a from a HR recruitment perspective, what I can say to your listeners is document those conversations you have, those observations you have, just write a note, date it, so that you can refer back to it if ever you need
to. Yes, exactly. Jackie, if leaders listening to this realise that they would be far better off engaging a recruitment specialist like yourself, you've mentioned this all the way through, but can you draw it together in a summary now as to how you would engage with them? What would the recruitment process look like? So the organisation contacts you. What happens next? What would you do?
So I'll talk broadly to that, because every recruitment agency will have their own approach. So generally speaking, there would be some kind of, you know, meeting on site at your business. This is what I expect generally. When I start integrating my services into a business, I want to know your history, you know, some key milestones, things that you're really, as a business owner, you're really proud of, and what you do really well now, what your team does really well now, and where they can get better. So remember, what I'm looking for, a person that can do the job but can also add value. So I want to have some insight into that. And I also want to understand your vision. And so once that is understood at a deeper level, what we do is we develop some attraction strategies, and that includes writing an advertisement and for the position. And that advertisement is prepared for a range of media, online, social media, through websites, etc. And that advertisement is a reflection of the position description. So that the position description details what the role is, the key responsibilities, accountabilities, measurables, so what makes this job a success, the metrics. I want to know skills, And I want to know the values of your organisation, because I'm going to be integrating your values throughout the entire campaign. So then we put the advertisement out and we distribute that, and we get, you know, applicants back, and that process of assessing those can take, you know, up to a week. We usually let it run for a couple of weeks, but we'll start that interview process fairly soon. And we'll be looking for standouts on paper, those people that have reached out to us previously.
Yes.
And we'll start with a telephone call and progress through to a first interview, or to see how they present and their body language. And at that point, I'll be interviewing with the business owner, or I'll be sending them perhaps a second interview with a number of people of influence within the business. After that process, once we come down to one or perhaps two, we'll do some reference checks. You know, and they're quite extensive conversations, looking for that past performance and how that person will be able to deliver that in their new environment. And then of course, it's the administration, the negotiation of terms and agreement, the administration of the contract, and preparing for the start date. So, and then the onboarding program then commences from there.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So I know, though, that cost is one of the reasons organisations don't engage a recruitment specialist like yourself, because that's quite a comprehensive role you play, isn't it? A really comprehensive role. I doubt that any organisation, any leader or any person in an organisation who is in engaging someone themselves is going to be as comprehensive as that. They're not going to, they don't even realise that all those things are important, let alone have the time to do them. So they recognise it's a big job. And yet I know that the cost of hiring the wrong person, if they try and do it themselves to save money, and then having to replace them, as well as the time that's involved in that, not to mention the stress of having difficult conversations with them, either to improve their performance or to terminate their employment, that has significant impacts on organisations and the leaders that are involved in them. And I know that, you know, some of the statistics I've looked at is that the direct costs of replacing an employee with a salary of $30,000 to $50,000 a year costs 20% of the salary.
And it takes
52 days on average.
Yes.
And then there's all those additional costs as well, that the indirect costs. So you just explain that a bit more, because I'm sure people raise that with you. How do you handle that cost issue, and what do you see as the counterbalance to the cost of a recruitment person?
Yeah, well, I'm equally as shocked in those figures, Marie. For a small to medium-sized business, it's untenable. It's not only the cost, but the effort that goes into it, and then there's also always the risk that it doesn't work out.
Yes, that's right.
It's a huge investment. So I suppose what we've done is structured our fees quite differently. And we've structured it so that it's a fee for service. So all those elements I broke down before for you.
Yes.
You know, we're not saying that we will deliver all of that. If you want us to deliver all of that, we will.
Yes.
But if there's some elements of that process that you as a business owner would prefer to do yourself, in terms, you might like to do that to save cost, you might like to do that because you enjoy that part of the process, well, absolutely, go ahead and do that. And that way we can offer a service that is expertise, yet is still viable for small to medium-sized business. And I suppose what our business philosophy is, that we want to see our clients thrive, and we want to partner with our clients for the long term. We don't just want to come in and deliver a solution for the short term. This is about a long-term partnership in our view, and we're paid for our time And that's really all it comes down to.
I observe quite often that one of the issues that I think organisations think they're good at, but I think they're very bad at, is actually writing job description, the advertising, the marketing of it. I hear them saying either that they got hundreds and hundreds of applications that they couldn't even process, or they got hardly any. And then when you look at the advertisement that they produced, it's not surprising either it was so general, no wonder they got hundreds and hundreds, or it was so empty of the values and the aspirations of the organisation that they didn't get any. Nobody would want to work there because of the way that was written. And I could see that some organisations may want to outsource that, and maybe some of the other issues. So it's very, that's an interesting what you've said there about that they they can engage you for specific parts of the process.
Yeah, and I tell you what, having run a business and owned a business myself, it is really hard to see the wood for the trees in that you are the brand, you are the business, and then to, you know, it's hard enough to write a profile of yourself on LinkedIn, but you know, to write about your business can be equally challenging, and to have a trusted third party that can have that deep conversation with you at the beginning and understand as an outsider what you're offering. And there are things that you might not even realize that you're offering, but you are, and that differentiates you as an employer. So what we're looking to do is to understand what makes you an employer of choice and to attract that talent.
That's right. Yes.
And that talent is a part of your competitive differentiation. Now, I just wanted to share with you, sorry, as you were talking, it just reminded me of some really, another interesting experience that happened in November to me. There's a private club that we work with, and they needed a receptionist. And so, of course, we put a fabulous advertisement out there. And you think, oh, it can't be that hard to recruit a receptionist. Holy moly. We got 137 applicants. So sifting through that was such a significant task. And then, of course, everybody can do the job, but understanding the motivation and then matching that to the brand and to have that person represent and is extension of that brand.
And that's a really important point you make there, matching the applicant and their experience to the brand, because that's where the cultural fit happens, doesn't it? That
you get that
very good cultural fit the closer you can match them. Yes. Jackie, look, we could go on talking for ages here. Look, this has been very valuable, and I know that there are leaders that I've been working with that will find this very helpful for their future recruitment. I'll make sure they get a copy of this, and, of course, you'll have a copy. I've also invited, just telling my listeners that I've also invited Jackie to write a guest post on my blog on how to engage with a recruitment specialist like yourself when you're employing new staff. And if you aren't already subscribed to my blog, you can do that at peopleempowered.com/blog. Jackie, if people want to make contact with you, what's the best way that they can do that?
Yes, certainly. I think going through the website would be the best way. EnvisageHRSolutions.com.au.
EnvisageHRSolutions.com.au. When you write your guest post, we'll have them on the bottom of that anyway. Thank you, Jackie.
Absolute pleasure.